So for some people, the definition of Web3 means like crypto or blockchain or other things. For me, it's more like a user-centric definition, which is actually not that different from the original Web2, which is like, how do we give people ownership, autonomy, freedom? Very, very core to like our community's mission, you know?
Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Do the Woo, the WooCommerce Builder Podcast, episode 195. This show is brought to you by Foo Sales for your Woo point of sales solution and OS training, keeping your clients and yourself on top of learning WordPress and WooCommerce. I'll tell you more about our pod friends later in the show, but let's get started as we kick off the Woo Vision Series with Ronald and Kathy as they chat with visionaries as we look at the future in WordPress, WooCommerce, e-commerce, and the web.
Welcome, and we have a new show lined up for you, which is called Woo Visions. And this one I'm co-hosting with the amazing Kathy Zandt, who is the Cadence Product Manager at Stellar WP. And we have the first guest, which is Matt Mullenweg himself. Welcome. It's really nice to have you here on the first session of Woo Visions. So let me just dive in straight with the first question. So we have, I think everybody knows that you are one of the WordPress co-founders, but you also manage, own, and invest in a large portfolio of businesses, and one of which is WooCommerce, going back quite a few years now when it was acquired under the name of WooThemes. So just sticking to that topic, as of course the title of the podcast is Do the Woo. How important has WooCommerce been for WordPress, looking back?
I guess there's a few different ways to answer that. But the first and simplest is that it was the first time in the history of WordPress that I modified my mission. So previously, Automattic's mission, which also overlapped with WordPress, was to democratize publishing. It's two words. And we doubled it. It became democratized publishing and commerce. And very much so, I believe that WooCommerce does take the philosophy, the mission, the sort of extensibility, everything that we love about WordPress and WordPress itself, and then brings it to this use case, which was nascent when we did the acquisition in 2015, but now is becoming pretty dominant, which is like this idea that you can have a commercial side of the open web as well. And maybe you're selling something digital or physical or booking time or whatever it might be. But this can be a really, really empowering concept, just like publishing was and still is for WordPress itself.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a lifeline for many businesses as well. So earlier this morning, I checked the statistics on WordPress, and 43.2% is the latest famous statistic. But of those, 20.5% have also WooCommerce installed. So if you look at that trajectory of the last, or since 2015, and where this is heading to, what is your prediction on that, and how important is that figure?
That's also remarkable when you think that to use WooCommerce today, it is a more technical lift than WordPress itself. So someone either is a little more technical or developer or had a developer help them probably set up those WooCommerce sites. Where does that go in the future? Well, WooCommerce will get easier and easier to use with every release. And so I don't think it's ever like all the sites, WordPress sites, but some good chunk of people might want to have a commercial part of their, even if it's a personal site. Maybe it's like selling prints from a photo you took or a little members area. Maybe it's fundraising for a nonprofit. You know, it could be anything that you imagine. But as soon as there's like a credit card or something involved, it brings in an incredible amount of complexity, which is, you know, Woo is kind of now like the size and complexity of WordPress itself. It is its own project, which is like this big, important and complex thing that is on a path similar to where WordPress was in its early days of like taking this thing that's really powerful and just making it easier and easier and more accessible with every release.
Could that also be a danger of its success that as it becomes more complex, that it becomes too difficult? Or is that something that automatics is so conscious about and wants to work towards to simplify, to make it easier, more accessible?
I think very much if you look at the history of everything I've ever been involved in, it's taking something, making it really powerful, and then simplifying it. So, you know, I sometimes tell folks that we have like a Promethean task. You know, he was the god who like stole the fire from the gods and brought it to the people. like this has all been possible for decades, but it used to cost like $1 million to have a CMS like WordPress. And you'd probably spend a year building it, or you'd spend like a ton of money paying for it. Same thing for WooCommerce. People used to spend millions of dollars to do what now you can download and Woo does out of the box for free. So it's easy to forget that that was just 10 or 15 years ago when these things were quite expensive and quite hard. The good news is also that it could always be easier. So as far as we get, you know, WordPress got really easy, but then, you know, obviously more complex layouts or richer things were still hard. So it's like, okay, now we're going to build Gutenberg. And Gutenberg will now open up an entirely new set of use cases to an entirely new set of people along our mission of democratizing things, which to me means making it accessible. The sort of means of production are in the hands of the people. So that is, again, the curve we're doing with WooCommerce. And, you know, you can see us doing it with other projects in the future. You know, Automattic has some other things like Tumblr, Jetpack that we work on. With all of them, I'm always thinking, where are we on that curve of sort of flexibility, capability, power, and ease of use?
And when making investments in other companies, do you always look at products that can complement each other? Is there a bigger vision as how that can work and support each other?
Very much so. So sometimes it's directly technical, like when something is built on top of WordPress as a plugin, like Jetpack or WooCommerce are. So that's very naturally complementary, right? When one gets better, it also helps the other and vice versa. And sometimes it's more of a mindset. So for example, Day One, which is an app you can run on your phone or your desktop that provides a fully encrypted, what we would call blogging, Day One calls journaling. So essentially you can have a private, fully encrypted blog. It's as secure as one password. You know, no one can, so you could put pictures of your kids in it. You could use it as a journal. You could put, you know, notes from your therapist in it, whatever was important and private to you, you could put in there. And, you know, it'd be fully encrypted and on your device. That's kind of like a publishing thing. So it doesn't share any code with WordPress, but it shares very much a philosophy and a mindset. And I believe it to be highly complementary. In fact, one thing we want to do is make it a little easier to go between, like start a post in Day One and then publish it to your blog as an example. Or have a shared journal. Well, right now, journals are kind of single player. What if we could make a multiplayer? So you could have a shared journal with your family or with your significant other or something like that. It starts to be really powerful, but it's still blogging at the end of the day, whether you call it journaling or blogging or whatever else, a gratitude journal. It's essentially what I would call like this micro publishing or publishing.
But it's fascinating. I can just suddenly have this glimpse of the future, how we can possibly step away from these hosted social media platforms and have that power back to ourselves again. So that's really exciting. I'm just going to hand over to Kathy because I'm sure she has so many more questions on this particular topic. So.
Well, I'm very interested about basically the WooCommerce. There's a whole ecosystem of plugins that are supportive of WooCommerce. How do you feel that all of these other, there's like Iconic and other checkout types of add-ons and different ways of customizing WooCommerce. Do you feel like this is a healthy part of WooCommerce and how will it fuel growth going forward?
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, Woo extensions are just like WordPress plugins in that it's totally open. People can do whatever they like. They can charge for it. They can have it part of the marketplace. They can have it not part of the marketplace. And that's where something will always happen first. But just like with WordPress, we want to take the best of whatever is in those extensions and bring it into core or make it accessible to a wider audience. And that'll always, and then the people making the extensions will make something new or they'll make the better version of that or, you know, whatever it is. So there's always that kind of adoption curve. So you can imagine it like early adopters, developers, and then it kind of, you know, gets into the middle of like early adopter or medium adopters or late adopters, like where people just pay the money and they get it, but it's pretty easy to use. And at some point, it's just accessible to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that WooCommerce has really fit a need of being able to quickly and easily get commerce going, especially for smaller, I think, smaller storefronts that are trying to bring wares forward where, you know, there's obviously larger competition out there that is much more expensive, that have a harder has a greater barrier of entry for people to get going, whereas WooCommerce helps people get started faster. How do you see WooCommerce as a tool for either smaller businesses, larger businesses? Where are you seeing more of the growth in WooCommerce?
Right now, I see it a little bit like a barbell, where it's like skinny in the middle, thick at the ends. So one place where we're doing very, very well is when stores graduate from Shopify, they outgrow it. And so these are big, serious stores, sometimes doing nine figures a year in revenue, you know, 100 million plus. And they just find the limitations of Shopify SaaS to be too constricting for their business. Or maybe they're not aligned with the business model where Shopify is going. And so they want that full control that open source gives you. They want the ease of development and the ease of hiring developers that WordPress and WooCommerce give you. And they come to Woo. There's very few businesses that ever make it that far, much less, you know, there's not a lot of websites, but it's probably a good part of the GMV that goes through Woo is these bigger sites. The other end is at the very early. So it's folks who are already using WordPress and maybe are going to sell a single product, or they have an idea for a store, or, you know, it's, the stores that are just a sparkle in someone's eye still, or small ones. Also on that end of the barbell could people who are cost conscious, maybe a Magento or Shopify or Wix Commerce, or whatever it is it's too expensive for where their business is or where they are at that moment. You know, WooCommerce is very inexpensive. It's either free or the extensions, even if you get like all the ones you need, like probably looking at a couple hundred bucks a year, not the thousands and thousands that others are going to charge you. So that's where we're seeing a lot of the growth. Now, the cool thing is that, again, when I talked about powerful and ease of use as being the two things we're always working on, that is serving those two sides of the barbell. So the powerful is serving the people graduating from Shopify and other commerce solutions like Magento, I forget the Salesforce one, and Fusion or something. They want the power. And then the easy use is essentially making it that easier on-ramp at the lower ends, which I don't really think is lower. It's just like smaller end. It's like newer. But someday, some portion of those new stores are going to be the big giants. And that's what's fun. One cool thing that's always been neat about WordPress is like, hey, if you're a blogger posting once a week photos of your cat, you can do that. If that blog takes off and becomes the biggest cat blog in the world, like I Can't Ask Cheeseburger did, or like TechCrunch started just a personal blog and then grew into like this media empire, you could be on WordPress the whole way, you know, to thousands of authors, millions of posts, et cetera. It'll work for that very simple use case and also scale all the way into the big one. And that's also something we want for Woo. Like we want it to be fine with one product and 10 orders a month. And I wanted to be fully scalable for millions and millions of orders a month and hundreds of millions of billions of dollars of transactions going through it.
I think some of the feedback on that is that it's sometimes maybe the reputation of these really large stores that it can't cope, and it's the database and so on. Do we need more examples of these big stores that literally run hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue through WooCommerce?
Yeah.
As a way of sort of publicizing that it can handle that. It can handle medium and very large stores.
Yeah, we need more examples. We need those examples to be growing. And what's tough is right now, you know, a lot of these stores don't have any relationship with WooCommerce. They spend $1,000 a year on their Woo extensions, and then they'll talk to anyone at the store or anything. But they have a very tight relationship and commercially significant one with their web host. And if you think of the incentives, this is part of why I want to do a lot more WooCommerce hosting and host some of these big stores. Like if you're one of these big stores and listening to this, please come. I want to host you. because when we see a bottleneck as kind of the people also making the software, we're like, oh, let's fix that in the core. Like let's make it so, you know, the database structure, whatever it is, works to millions of rows here. And versus a host, more of their incentive is like, well, they, for whatever reason, even those open source feel like they can't fix the core. So they're like, let's sell you a bigger box, you know, speeds and feeds. We're going to get you more CPU and more, you know, hard disk and more memory on the box. And they're just going to sell you like kind of a bigger and bigger box. But as we see with WordPress, it's often the code improvements that you can get sometimes orders of magnitude, speed and scalability, just by structuring the database or optimizing the code in the most efficient way. And part of why WordPress is so scalable today is because we ran WordPress.com. So as we started to get millions of blogs doing billions of page views, even like funny edge cases that were performance impairing would start to show up for us pretty major. And we'd always look at it from a core first mentality. Now, like, how do we hack this for ourselves or build a plugin? Like, how do we make this in core really, really efficient? One of my favorite examples was there was the smiley code. So the code to turn, because you can type a colon and a parentheses and it'll turn that into a smiley, kind of pre-emoji even. That code was a regular expression that was recursive and would loop. And there was this kid's website called Club Penguin, and a bunch of the Club Penguin users came on WordPress.com and they would do these crazy blogs and write to each other. And they would use WordPress in a way that no one has used WordPress like before or since. It was like really, they'd have these super long comment threads and people would post, they would, I guess, copy and paste thousands and thousands and thousands of smileys in the comment. And then there'd be hundreds or thousands of these comments. And so it turns out this inefficiency where it would just get a little slower every additional smiley that the regular expression was matching in the text, became to where these pages would actually crash our servers. It would run out of memory. I mean, that's kind of amazing. The smileys were taking down the server, which is funny. But the fix in the line of code was just a couple characters. It's a very small tweak to the regular expression that took it from literally taking down expensive clusters of servers that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars per year to being a total non-issue. It was a few characters of a change. There's problems and bugs like that in WooCommerce today. We've fixed pretty much all of them for WordPress. WordPress almost doesn't really have it anymore. We've kind of found all those bottlenecks. But in WooCommerce, I'm sure there still are some more. And so I'd love to have a hosting relationship with some of these big stores so that we can have that really tight feedback loop between the WooCommerce team and the customers that are pushing the limits of what Woo can do. This happens a bit through the host today. And some of the hosts do contribute some things back, but it's just not that common in other organizations.
So there's two lessons here, actually, isn't it? That bringing in the big stores on, I'm assuming this is the VIP offering, and I really dive deeper into the limitations and the code and improve that. But also there's a little bit on the hosting relationships, and maybe it's sort of a call out to the host to say, well, we have this fantastic product for which, you know, they obviously charge and earn quite a bit.
Yeah.
And to collaborate, because that makes it's a win-win situation. And to collaborate to this open source and invest more into it, will benefit everybody eventually.
Yeah. And that's also one of, I would say, WooCommerce's biggest challenges is just that, you know, the WooCommerce team makes a small percentage of the money in the WooCommerce ecosystem. Most of it's made by service providers and host. But we're competing with the Shopify's and stuff of the world that capture like 95%. So we need to figure out how to sort of get that balance so that we have the revenue, to be honest, to hire developers to make the core software really good to compete with the proprietary alternatives. And that's always the balance there.
It's on its own. It's a huge ecosystem. And maybe competing there with, Fire for the Future towards the WordPress bigger project. There's probably a bit more conversation and dialogue to be had with service providers and hosts.
It's a lot of what I talked about in the State of the Word as well, like this idea of like Fire for the Future and putting things back. But it's also, you know, as the people running WooCommerce, Automattic has to also make it easy for people to spend money with us. And there's been some of the changes over the years, some of which were somewhat controversial, but for every change, I've had in mind, like, what makes this a really sustainable business that can be around a decade from now? So like when we bought WooCommerce, extensions were almost all one-time fees. But of course, like, they have lifetime development. You need to constantly be updating and everything like that. And so we shifted to be all like renewing things. And then we made it so it auto-renewed versus you having to like go in and put your credit card again. And that was a little controversial at the time. But I was like, well, if this is like a subscription should renew, and we need more people to renew than that, because then that allows us to like increase the development every year and plan to have 10 people on it this year and 15 people on it next year, you know, that sort of thing. And so like it behooves us as well to create the sustainable business practices that, you know, provide value to folks in the ecosystem that's something they want to buy and spend money on.
Talking of state of the word, Kathy, I know you've been diving a little bit deeper in that.
Well, I was interested in something that you brought up in State of the Word. We talked a little bit about Web3, and you didn't really want to define it. Do you want to define it now?
I think what's one thing that's nice about these versions is people kind of bring their own definitions.
Yeah.
So to me, so for some people, the definition of Web3 means like crypto or blockchain or other things. For me, it's more like a user-centric definition, which is actually not that different from the original Web 2, which is like, how do we give people ownership, autonomy, freedom, very, very core to like our community's mission, you know?
Right. You talked a little bit about decentralization and ownership in State of the Word. And in the crypto space, I mean, the whole idea of Bitcoin has been, you know, completely decentralized, completely it's all in the, you know, the Bitcoin white paper, and basically how crypto has worked has been completely decentralized. And now we're starting to see the advent of these DAOs and NFTs and smart contracts and things like that. And I know that this will, you know, it's pretty experimental, and there's a lot of like scams and things that are happening in that space, but there's ideas that are being played with there. And I'm wondering if you're watching that space and what things are you noticing that are innovative there?
Yeah. I think where my antenna goes up, or my spidey sense, is when people are selling you one thing, but actually giving you another. So I do see some folks talking about decentralization and the Web3 under the banner of Web3, but they're actually just making a new centralization. It's like they're kind of like, oh, they're just trying to shift power from an incumbent to them, not actually put it in the hands of the people. And a great essay about this is actually Moxie Marlinspike's essay, where he sort of created some, you know, NFTs and some DAO type stuff and everything like that. He's the guy behind and was a CEO until recently of Signal, which is the open source encrypted messaging app. It's an alternative to like WhatsApp and others. So his bona fides are huge and he's deeply technical. And he goes in there and be like, oh, you know, in my MetaMask wallet, it turns out MetaMask actually isn't a full node. It's just talking to this API. And so when OpenSea took down my NFT, it actually disappeared from my MetaMask as well. So what we thought was like this open thing on a blockchain, it was still on the Ethereum blockchain, but because it wasn't on OpenSea, it actually didn't exist and all these other sort of supposedly decentralized things. And so I think there's a lot of that out there. So we just need to look with a critical eye, because it's very easy for sort of technology populists to sell us one thing, these ideas, and then like actually deliver something, which is like sometimes the opposite or not that at all. The nice thing about, the tough thing about that in the crypto space is there is so much complexity and overhead to running like a full Ethereum node or like something where like you're not just a client to a centralized service. The good news in WordPress is it's a lot easier to switch host, which is kind of like being a client, but it's actually not that difficult to run it even on your own computer or your home server. And in fact, like QNAP home NASes are like a Docker image or something that you can run fully on your own, you know, top to bottom infrastructure is pretty accessible to someone with like an afternoon and a bit of patience. You could get that running. It's not like a computer science degree thing. It's more just like, you know, reading the tutorial and clicking on the buttons kind of thing. And so that I feel like we're really putting both a principled and theoretical freedom, but also a very, very practical freedom into the hands of even non-technical people, which to me is very, very important. And so what I really like about the Web3 space is the idea and the hope that I have is that these things that are today really hard to do and maybe like don't give you as much freedom if you do, will get to the point where it's a lot easier to do and a lot more real world autonomy and freedom and how it works. But, you know, Moxie has this line in his post, which he's like, people don't want to run servers. And you know what? After 17 years, 18 years of doing WordPress, I commiserate with that quite a bit. It's a big responsibility to run a server. And now you're not just worried about updating WordPress. You're worried about every single part of the stack, the operating system, the database, the networking layer, the firewall, the user systems, the passwords, the access, the SSH keys, the encryption, the DNS, there's a lot of steps in there to truly run it yourself. And I completely understand why a lot of people want to outsource that to someone else, essentially like outsource the IT part of it. That's why we think about import and export so much and why it's so important to me that it's very easy to move between WordPress web host, whether that's WordPress.com or GoDaddy or WP Engine. Like, again, your new one will often move your site for you. You can't do that from a Squarespace or Wix because they would have to like rewrite it from scratch. But from WordPress, the data models are totally open. So, you know, it's actually pretty easy for someone to take a half hour and move your site to a completely new host.
Interesting. If I can describe you as a visionary, and there's a quote from Chris Hardy, who I think he worked with you, and he quoted this in a recent post-status blog post, and he said, I discovered that he has superpower. He can see around the corners and beyond horizons in ways that few other people can. And I suspect time travel is evolved if I didn't know better.
That's very kind. Thank you for telling me that. I missed that from Chris.
Hey, Bob WP here, and I'd like to take a moment to thank two of our pod friends for their support of Do the Woo. If you have a client who is looking for a point-of-sale solution, consider suggesting FooSales. In fact, FooSales is the first native WooCommerce point-of-sale to support in-person payments using Square Reader. Now, you can use FooSales with the Square Terminal for your client projects, but the icing on the cake is that it not only works with FooSales iPad and Android apps, but the Foo web app. So you really need to check this out if your clients have been asking for a point-of-sale solution or a new point-of-sale solution. Find them at FooSales.com. When you build a client site, after the fact, you are doing one or two things. Continuing to help them maintain their site or simply handing it over. Now, whatever the case may be, you need to give your clients even more confidence in running their Woo shop. OS Training has a great collection of WooCommerce tutorials that will help your clients get the most out of their site. And as a bonus for you, the builder, you can also find training to enhance your knowledge as they continue to grow their WordPress and WooCommerce developer training. So whether it's for yourself or to help your clients understand and take control of their Woo shop, OS Training has you covered at ostraining.com. And now let's head back to the show.
So I think it's, you know, going a bit... Moving on from what Kathy said about the Web3 and the metaverse. And I remember a year and a half ago in another Do the Woo podcast you did, you already talked about metaverse. And I checked this with Bob, and for all of us, it just went straight over our head. So, you know, where do you get this sort of inspiration from that? And how do you keep on, unless time travel really is a thing and you don't want to give the secret away, but you know, where do you get the inspiration from? Who are your big, you know, the inspiration sources, and how do you put that then into your own vision view? And then I have a follow-up question on that.
There's so much good stuff in there. Let me talk about time travel first. I actually thought about this. If I did have a time travel machine, the version I think would be really fun to do isn't going super far in the future or the past, because I think that's a little tricky. Like, you know, the Earth is moving so fast. Like, there's just some complications there for how all that would work. And if you go too far, like, you know, imagine someone even 100 years ago coming to today. Like, how hard would it be just to catch up to, like, what we take for granted? So imagine going 100 years in the future would be also really hard. But what I think would be really fun, have you seen the movie Groundhog Day, where he like repeats the same day 1,000 times? I feel like that version of time travel, I would think would be fun to do, like live the same day 1,000 times. I also love that he learns new skills, like he learns jazz piano or something, where he just like takes it every day. And like, it's kind of cool. Like, that would be kind of fun to like almost like plug in and just learn a new skill over and over again without time moving forward. So that'd be the time travel I would do. I'd do the same day over and over.
It better be a really good day, though, because living that same day an awful day 100 times wouldn't be so good.
Well, you get to make it good, right? Yeah. So that's part of the fun. Yeah. That's what, it's a really brilliant movie. I recommend it to folks. So where I find inspiration and get ideas, I read a tremendous amount. So, you know, I probably read 4 or 5 hours a day. And that is a mix of books, often first thing in the morning, blogs, you know, are kind of like the meat. And then my sugars or carbs are probably like social networks, like Tumblr and Twitter. That's like, you know, it's my guilty pleasure. I can't quit it. And I find some value from it sometimes, but it's obviously not where I think I'm really progressing. But I often find links to blogs or articles or books sometimes on social media. So, for books, I feel like the best way, you know, sci-fi is really where you get a lot of inspiration for what's happening. Whether that's Neal Stephenson, Isaac Asimov, I forget the name of the author, but the Three Body Problem, like there's so much good sci-fi, Dune, like, and you read this and it's kind of like a possible future of where, this is what happens often when one part of society gets really exaggerated relative to other parts of society. You know, like this is what happens if we say government has all the answers. This is what happens if we say government has none of the answers, if we totally get rid of governments. Like, this is what happens, like psychohistory and Asimov's Foundation series. Like, if we think that some combination of psychology and historical, you know, data gathering is like the thing that predicts the future. And then what happens then? So I find that really fun. And then blogs, you know, there's so many good writers today. And on WordPress, folks like Ben Thompson, you know, has Stratechery. Actually, someone I used to work with as well. Now is just such an incredible publisher. There's a Substack, some Substacks I really like. So newsletters I follow. Matt Levine writes for Bloomberg. It's a column, but also goes out as a newsletter. Like there's just folks who write every single day and just do such an incredible job of like finding the best stuff. And then I follow all the WordPress ones, you know, post status, do the woo. That's the thing I have the hardest time keeping up with it is actually the podcast. Because I don't commute. And so I don't really have like a lot of podcast time in my day. And if I'm running or exercising, often I'll do music to make it bearable for me to get through it. So like the podcast time is probably my hardest to find. And my backlog of podcasts, I think I actually just looked, you know, Automattic has a podcast app called Pocket Cast. Check out Pocket Cast if you haven't used it anymore, but it actually tells you how many hours are in your queue. I think my current queue is like 180 hours.
Ouch. Yeah.
I got nothing to do. I listen to them sped up. So like, hopefully I can get through that a little faster, but that's where probably my biggest backlog right now. Even bigger than my book backlog.
Do you publish any of the good books that you read and share them with your audience that they sort of have a...
Yeah. I try to do a once a year. I think I missed last year. I also read fewer books last year than I read in like any year in the past decade. There's something like the combination of like COVID and reopening. And like, I think I was doom scrolling too much on social media where I slowed down a lot. But yeah, it's on my to-do list to blog my reading list. I publish everything and then I try to like highlight the ones that I found particularly good. If you want a fun sci-fi recommendation that's kind of short, it's like a novella, and really kind of blew my mind. It was so creative. Check out This Is How You Lose the Time War. One of the more interesting kind of universes I've gone into in a while.
Nice. I've got a part two of this time travel question. So
it's a time travel book too, which is kind of funny.
Well, I think it might be the title of the podcast. But you know, going back to the your vision and how you digest that, and I know you do a lot of meditation. I'm assuming you still do that, and you get a lot of good strength from that. But how do you then translate that vision to all the WordPress folks? You know, state of the word is an announcement, but that's probably a accumulation of a lot of research and thinking years prior to that. And maybe if we go back to how Gutenberg was announced and launched, and you could relive that 100 times, mm-hmm. where there may be parts in that where you think, actually, I could have done that slightly different. And then I suppose going in the future, will you apply these learnings?
I'm pretty happy with how Gutenberg's been going. Like I wish it was faster, but I think, you know, software just takes time, and especially something as ambitious as Gutenberg. So it was controversial in the beginning, but I feel like that was necessary to do the shift. Because if you look at it, it's kind of the biggest shift we've ever had in WordPress from a code point of view, from an interface point of view, everything. And so I feel like there was a little bit of a bandage rip that had to happen that I was expecting, and we did experience the pushback. But now more and more, even people who hated Gutenberg at the beginning are like, yeah, but I tried it out last week and it's a lot better, or I love copying and pasting from Google Docs now, or just like it kind of like eventually wears people down. And which brings me to the answer to your first part of the question, which is probably one of my favorite quotes in the world. If I had to put something on Billboard, it would be this. It's the best way to predict the future is to invent it. So future doesn't happen by default. It's all like people building things, sitting at keyboards, having conversations like this, you know, ruminating, thinking about it in the shower, thinking about it over coffee. Like that's how it actually happens. And I think that's one of the most powerful ideas too, that especially on the internet, like people building the future of WordPress are at computers just like you and me are now. They're not more special computers. They're not like, they don't have special keyboards or magical mice that allow them to create WordPress. It's just kind of like the same stuff everyone has access to. And that's pretty amazing, you know, where for other things, I imagine if you're building like a rocket ship or a boat or a car, you need special tools. But the means of production, the tools for building the internet are actually widely accessible in a really cool way. So, you know, whatever your vision is, I think that it almost doesn't matter because you learn so much in building something. You can have all the ideas in the world. You can go to the mountain and come down with your stone tablets. Guess what? If they're written in stone, it's not going to work. You need to modify it constantly. And it's really the iteration process, which I think makes us able to, quote unquote, predict the future. It's not that we knew where we were going to end up. It's that we were like, oh, this seems like a cool place. Let's go and let's walk a mile and then check, are we closer or further? Is there quicksand? Is there a mountain? Is there a river? Is it like we thought it was like a mile away and it's actually like 10 miles away? Like you're just constantly adjusting course based on the journey. And for me, that's very much listening to users, watching people try to use the software, you know, WordCamps and user events. And I read the comment sections a lot. So like I read WP Tavern and post status a bit for the articles, but I usually know what's in the articles. And so really I go to the comments and like, what is the conversation on YouTube, on the podcast? Like I love reading YouTube comments, which is, I guess, a weird thing I do, but it's like, what are people saying? Twitter, I follow like all these keywords for people talking about WordPress and WooCommerce and everything. Like what is the happening in the community around this? And then that's kind of an information flow for where we need to pay attention. Even the people who are like trolling or angry or saying terrible things, like, you know what? At least they care. That's way better than someone like ignoring you or apathy, right? So I almost want someone who loves it and who hates it better than a bunch of people who just don't even pay attention to it. And that's also why like I don't mind when things get spicy in the WordPress community, because like, you know what? At least we care. And as long as we remember there's a human on the other side of the screen And like, we probably want the general same things as the outcome, which is like a freer, more open internet with great software to use. That allows us to come back from like this huge fight we're having over like the naming prefix of a table or the structure of receipts or something. And be like, all right. Like, let's take time out. What do we want here? And like, you know, what's something we can try? Like, what's, maybe we can't agree on the right answer, but maybe we can agree on the next experiment to run. And that'll give us some more data on like, you know, it's not about being right either. Like, I really could care less. There's something I care about the least in the world. It's being correct. It's really just about like getting to this outcome. And if that means I have to look like I was the dumbest person in the room and I had all the wrong ideas and everything, but we still get to that outcome, I'm still super happy. I don't need credit. I don't need to be right. I don't need anything. Just want to get to this world where like we're making great software that people love using and has a fun, supportive community and enables people to do stuff that they couldn't do before.
That's a beautiful thing, actually. One of my questions I was going to ask you, but I think you've pretty much answered that, was, you know, how do you deal with criticism? How do you filter feedback, good or bad? But I think that's pretty much answered. So again, it proves you are a time traveler.
I just personally always look for what's behind the message. Sometimes the messages are hard, and I will give feedback to folks like, hey, you know, this came across in a really weird, mean way, or I think maybe it came across a little harsher than me. So like, we do have those conversations too. I think it's important to keep the community positive and healthy. But regardless, maybe it's someone who I'm never going to talk to. Maybe it's some anonymous account on the internet. It's like, okay, why do they care so much? What is driving them to say this like really strong, you know, string of curse words about something we're working on? And I find that really fascinating, almost like forensic. Or like if you're an anthropologist studying a culture or an alien, like observing, like what was this person's day that led them to posting this tweet? And sometimes it might not have anything to do with the software either. And it's also just keeping in mind, like everyone's on their own journey. You don't know what someone's going through, what their day was like, what their week was like. You know, it could be, you never know. And so I try to always just give folks the benefit of the doubt. And the grace that, you know what, I've had bad days too, and I've said things I regret. And it doesn't matter how much you meditate or whatever else you do. Everyone is human, and we're all going to do things or say things we regret, and we're going to be wrong, probably more often than not. But it's just like, you know, having grace for each other, and then also grace for yourself, I think is really, really key and important.
It's probably a good moment to take our hat off for all the support developers of hosting and plugin companies, because they obviously they do get it. At the worst, when everything goes wrong. So,
yeah. But we also have such amazing outpourings of support, you know? And that's something, I feel like growing up in Houston, this was actually a big thing because I have a very, very close friend who one fundamental thing we disagree on is kind of human nature. She is a little bit more on the sort of Hobbesian view where, you know, humans by nature, life is nasty, brutish, and short. Like, we're all just like, what's the saying? You know, like a few missed meals away from anarchy and, you know, riots in the streets and all these sorts of things. And that maybe like this, humans are fundamentally like more of a, what do you call it? Have a more like animal nature, which is just like could come out at any point. I have kind of the view that humans fundamentally are good. Now, there's some bad out there, you know, some percentage maybe has a mental or some whatever it is. And so there's evil in the world. We have to deal with that. But fundamentally, humans have a nature where they want to be part of a community. They want to connect. They want to help each other. And where I got this, I was trying to figure it out because we were arguing about this. I'm like, well, we obviously had different life experiences. Like, why do I believe this? I don't know if it was something I read. Honestly, growing up in Houston, we used to get really bad hurricanes. Actually, we still get bad hurricanes that are getting worse, actually, in a lot of ways. And beforehand, the news would always be like, oh, there's going to be looting because power would go out for a week or two. People wouldn't have food. People would be flooded out. They'd be on the roofs of their house. But what I would see is the community come together. And, you know, one of my best friends, he's actually now a firefighter, which is funny. But I remember like his brother had like some jet skis. And so like people were stranded on the roof of the house. They got the jet ski, which normally they'd have to drive, you know, an hour to the ocean to run. And they just, you know, went around the neighborhood and picked up people from the roof and then they'd take them. And, you know, the donations of food, the donations of shelter, the donations of everything, like it was really amazing. Yeah, there was probably some looting and there's probably some people who took advantage of the situation. But by and large, a city of millions of people was looking out for each other and helping their neighbors. And so I feel like that's the default. And that's what we should both try to encourage, expect, and highlight when it goes well.
Yeah, we kind of talked about like the NFTs and but other innovative commerce trends, such as holographic shopping assistants, NFTs, things like this. Are you seeing anything that is new and innovative that, you know, might eventually come into WooCommerce that might be since you're a time traveler, something that we can't really see? Like, we just kind of know checkouts, you know, we know basically how things work, but in the future, there could be different ways of checking out. There could be different ways of actually transacting commerce. Are you seeing anything on the horizon or anything sort of in experimental spaces that look like something that might come to WooCommerce?
You mentioned NFTs. I feel like selling digital goods and membership sites is something that I feel like could be a lot smoother in WooCommerce. So I really want to get that super, super good and super, super dialed in, including paid newsletters. Like, that should just be so easy, like a few clicks to set up. So call it Substack in a box or Superstack or whatever we call it. Like, that should just be like a very simple thing to do. And WooCommerce has all the ingredients. It's got MailPoet. It's got obviously WooCommerce itself. So I would say something I'm really focused on in 2022 is the checkout process. And just how can we make that so smooth and friction-free and utilize just whatever the best technology is, whether that's Google Pay, Apple Pay, you know, anything, you know, whatever it is, like, let's just make it super smooth and fast for people to check out, because why not? No one ever said like, I want to spend more time filling out this form or like doing something. So how do we make even, I think it's little stuff like, you know, there's autofill built in the browsers and 1Password and other extensions, LastPass. How do we make the autofill work really well with our forms? And maybe that's also going to them and saying, hey, 1Password, you're filling out, when people are filling in the shipping address, you're overriding the billing address. So how do we make it so you just target the one? How can we give you a context there to make that really nice? So like just stuff like that, I feel like we could make a bit smoother.
Yeah, there are a few plugins that are trying to reach a solution with those types of challenges to take away some of the friction and checkout and things like that. So, you know, like you were saying before, it would be interesting to see WooCommerce take a look at some of those things and make that just kind of out of the box with WooCommerce.
I want Woo to have the most beautiful checkout in the world. I want it to be the checkout that every other service is like, oh, we got to copy that.
I look forward to that. Very much so.
Which could be no checkout at all, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, just like you have the Amazon stores where you literally walk out with your shopping. Obviously, you need to have some account.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. That's probably a little trickier, but you do bring up point of sale. And there's now starting to be some Woo branded point of sale. That's obviously something that I think should get better as well. Yeah, the where you just walk out is kind of... Have you been in one of those stores yet?
No, I haven't. But the other good one, which we highlighted, was the when you're on one of, I think it's American Airlines or one of the Delta, so where you sit on a seat and you order whatever you want and it gets automatically charged to your account based on, you know, your seat position. So I think there's some really cool, innovative things happening in that space. But
it's that stuff.
How quickly can developers adapt to that and not to have some, you know, disintegrated system. And I think you referred to it previously where, you know, it's like Gmail only being able to send to Gmail users. But actually, if you have a Gmail, you can email everybody. So it's that one service that can serve all checkout in a way.
It's easy to forget how much, like, part of the revolution of Uber and ride sharing was something we probably take for granted now, which is you're not fumbling with change and cash at the end of a ride. you just literally walk out. And it's a big problem now for when people are in taxis. Like if I'm in a taxi, like an old school taxi in New York or something, you know, and this happens to everyone, so they know it by now. It's like the ride finishes and you just start to get out of the car and they're like, oh no, wait, you have to pay. And the credit card machines used to be terrible in them. Now they're pretty better. But like, it's like that, it was kind of a checkout experience. When I've done those stores where you just pick stuff up and walk out now a couple times in San Francisco, there's I think Amazon Go store. And even now in airports, I forget the name of it, but they do all the airport stores and JFK and a few others they have now where you just grab the stuff and walk out. And it's so funny. It feels kind of naughty. Like you're like,
I know where you're going with this. Yeah. Arrested for shoplifting. No, I thought it was one of those self-checkout.
And It's also like, I don't even want to do it on accident. So I kind of want to see like a confirmation when I walk out, like, oh, did you get everything? Because I don't even want to, if they accidentally miss something, I want to go back and scan it or whatever. Because yeah. I don't know. So I don't know. It's a really funny feeling. And I wonder if that user behavior is just something that we'll get used to. Kind of like putting your credit card online was really scary to people in the 90s and the 2000s. And now we take it for granted that, you know, that kind of like walking out, not being a bad thing is something that we'll get used to in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a few friends who have WooCommerce storefronts, and I've noticed like when they put on like Apple Pay or they put on Amazon Pay, immediately that becomes the like number one way of checking out. Would there ever be a WooCommerce Pay type of solution?
Yeah, I feel like we need something to make it really smooth there.
Yeah.
And one, just WooCommerce is seeing a lot of transactions, a lot of credit cards, a lot of stores. I think we said last year, 31 billion of transactions went through WooCommerce. So, I mean, that's pretty big.
Substantial, yeah.
You know, that's pretty good. Save credit cards or something to make that faster. That would be awesome. It is tricky, though, you know, because all the privacy stuff for browsers also makes cross-domain things harder. So I do wonder if, you know, Shopify does a pretty good job of this where they bounce through their domain, but it's like pretty branded. Maybe there's something like that. But I don't know. That's really up to the WooCommerce team.
Sure.
To figure out what the best thing is there.
Sure. And then the last question I really have is about security, because, you know, coming from the security space, I've seen just the maturity of WooCommerce and WordPress, the entire space, in terms of the awareness of security across the board, the speed in which the core team responds to security issues and gets things patched. It's almost like WordPress and WooCommerce have come into their own in terms of security. Is that a big part of what you think WooCommerce's success is? Because obviously with PCI DCS, that's a huge part, a huge concern for merchants, for card providers, everybody. Can you speak to security at all?
Security is something you do every day. You know, you're never finished. It's never like, okay, now we're secure because, you know, the code's written by humans and humans are imperfect. I think if you're running a WooCommerce store, this is why we make a product with Jetpack that does real-time backups. So if you're a blog or something, it's probably okay to back it up once a day. But if you're running a WooCommerce store of any size, you really need real-time backups because you don't want to lose a single order, right? Seconds after that order is done, you want it fully backed up in multiple locations. And that's what the Jetpack backup product does. So I really do think every WooCommerce store should be running that. The other side is updates. And that is just something we try to make it easy for people to upgrade and to push the updates and to work with hosts to secure sites, even if they don't update. Like that's just kind of what we've been doing with WordPress for many, many years. And so the WordPress community, I feel like, has gotten good at taking these things seriously. Triaging the reports, you know, duplicating them, talking to reporters, giving credit where it's due when someone reports an issue. We have the bounty system, and then just trying to make it on as many sites as possible, right? Because the older code is, the more likely it is to have a problem, no matter who wrote it, whether it's a Apple, that's a $3 trillion company, or, you know, a developer with a single person, a single plugin. So it's all about how can you update sites. So that's the thing, backup and updates, that to me are the key there.
I think we're coming towards the end of this really good, insightful podcast.
Congratulations on this podcast. Like, I'm so excited to hear where it goes. And I guess it's going to be a lot of future-facing stuff too. So I'm looking forward to learning.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And it'll be people who are sort of 1 foot inside the Woo space, 1 foot out, and sort of have an insight looking into the WooCommerce ecosystem view and see a little bit and hear from them what they see of the future of the vision, where we're heading towards, and we can all learn from that. But I just one final quick question for you there, because this episode very much reminds me of the Desert Island Discs that the BBC Radio 4 records. And if you haven't looked at it, it's worthwhile to look into it. But one of the last questions is, if you are on a deserted island, in this case, I'm going to slightly change it, because you can take one luxury item with you, which is apart from your computer, maybe a Starlink internet and coffee, or is it your saxophone? And I'm not sure if that's still a thing. But what would it be? What would you like to be stuck with on your deserted island?
Now, you said the things that get to it, because like a saxophone, they're all tools. And so they can provide you endless entertainment and learning, growth and everything. Although a saxophone on an island might not do as well. So maybe I would take a drum or something like that might be more to the elements. But if I were to say nothing that you already said, since you already picked all the ones I would pick, my luxury would definitely be like a tea apparatus, which is maybe a very British answer too. You know, I don't drink coffee. I love tea. But if there was some way I could have like hot water and, you know, something I can steep in it, or a matcha machine or something, that would be amazing. That would definitely be like a little pleasure that would make, just something nice in each day.
Yeah. Wow. I think I've learned so much from you and how you think, how you look at the world and into the future. So future. So thank you so much for your time, Matt.
Kathy, Ronald, congratulations. This is going to be an awesome podcast. I can't wait to see what y'all come up with. And thank you so much for being part of the WooCommerce community.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Really kind of you.
Hey, everyone. Bob WP here. And thanks again for tuning in to today's show. We'd like to give one more shout out to our two pod friends for that point of sale solution. Whether it's for your iPad, an Android app, or using the web app, check out foosale.com. And for WordPress or WooCommerce training, whether it's for yourself, a client, or a team member, OS Training has you covered. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, on the podcast here on dothewoo.io, or on your favorite podcast app. Till the next time, keep doing the woo.